Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And welcome to this episode of Music from the Tower. This is your host, John Romeri, and here we are in coronavirus mode. We have today a very interesting, what I think will be a very interesting show. We've all just experienced Easter like none of us ever have. Oof. And so today in the studio, I have my cohort in crime and assistant music director and cathedral organist, David Ball. Welcome, David.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be healthy and here.
Yes. You did spectacular work over the Triduum and Easter.
Yes, we did.
And we are also going to visit with musicians from three other major cathedrals here in the United States. We're going to go to Oakland, California and talk to Dr. Rudy DeVos. And then we're going out to Arlington, Virginia and speak with Dr. Richard Gabala. And then we're going to the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. and speak with Dr. Peter Latona. So we really have a full show today, so we better get going. Not much jib-jab on our side here. We're going to try our best to keep moving so we can hear from these three amazing musicians around the country. But first, I want to hear from my own amazing musician right here at Christ Cathedral, David. David, what an odd Holy Week for us, wasn't it?
Right? Just something. It's something out of a movie, out of a book, you know, something you'd never think you'd experience in real life.
It's just, and the sad part for us here at Christ Cathedral was, it's our very first one. You know, I mean, we were looking forward to our first chrism with all the priests there. We had the whole diocesan choir, the diocesan children's
choir. The Hazelwright organ was supposed to be here.
Yes,
you know, all
brass,
of these
the
things.
Organ, all of these things. And
well, I'm hyping up to the church's biggest feast. You know, yes. this is when, especially cathedrals really, you know, do it up. This is the time.
Well, I think we all look forward to all the great seasons, Christmas, Advent, Easter, Lent. But gosh, there's something about Holy Week and Triduum and the Great Vigil.
Well, and there's such special, specific liturgies that you can really get into as a worshiper, even as a, you know, a performing musician, but also as a Catholic. You know, this is the height of the church year. And, you know, I have all my favorite moments on Thursday when the feet are washed. Couldn't do that, you know. I have my favorite moments on Friday when, you know, everyone's reverencing the cross. Oh, no, can't do that either, you know. And that's when all the great music is sung, too. Couldn't do the Peter Latona Mandatum. We, you know, there was no Allegri Miserere this year. There's lots of our favorites
so
just aren't happening.
We just couldn't do. And part of the reason was, of course, we had small forces. We could only have, we had 10 in the loft at the very most of the time, 6 or 5. Then downstairs, we had maybe 4 or 5 people as well on the altar and 4 or 5 other servers around. Our cathedral's huge, you know, it seats 2,100. And there we were kind of ministering. And the whole thing was TV ministry, which, you know, in a normal place seems odd, but in this place seems very odd. Here we are, the place where TV ministry was almost born in this country. Dr. Schuller had it right the whole time. Just sit in your car and watch the service.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, we brought music to a bigger audience than we would have. It was only people in the church. You know, we have 30,000 plus views on every one of our live streams now.
Yes, it's amazing how many people are watching, and not just from our diocese or our parish, but gosh, they're saying hello from, you know, Amsterdam and from the Netherlands and from here and from there. And friends of mine, too, that are during the service, my little watches.
Yeah, mine, too. Yeah, all our musician friends checking in, saying, yes. What are they doing to handle this thing?
Yes, and also listening to our thing saying, oh, I love that piece. What test can is that? You know, it's been great. We really had a wonderful time in a very odd way. And in some ways, I did get in, you know, there were some parts of this that I sort of entered in a little deeper because I had less crazy in the choir loft.
Right. Well, and there's without a congregation, you know, you can almost focus more on, you know, the readings, the preaching, the music. You can focus in more because there's nothing else going on. And you're not getting up to go to the bathroom. Yeah. You know, you're not.
And when you think of the enormity of the music making of that time, you know, we usually have brass or a string and some woodwinds and timpani. And it was you and the organ that brought the joy. You know,
yeah, that was very scary.
Yes, but it was magnificent.
Time to read Open Score on national television.
We did not have our full complement of instruments, but we had David at the organ. And even though we don't have the Hazel Wright organ yet, our wonderful Walker technical instrument is...
Yeah, and Keith Chapman's old console, historic instrument on its own.
Doing an amazing job, and it was so festive, and you played so beautifully, and how odd to accompany only five or six singers.
Well, and especially not only to accompany those singers, but also to play for television. So certain pieces, when it was just the organ, had to be big and full, and then when the choir came in, knowing that the mix was different, you had to adjust right on the spot to balance that sort of by ear and sort of guessing what was going to turn out on the other end, which I think it came out very nicely. So.
Well, it was beautiful. And
I can't speak to your experience, but as a pretty well-trained musician myself, a young musician, this is not something you train for. Like, you train to like perform in a studio or to be in front of a crowd in a live audience, but even a studio is sort of a cold environment, but there's still some kind of closeness you feel. But in an empty cathedral that's completely empty, but you know that it's still live, there's an audience there that you don't see at all. And it's still live. It's not a recording. It has that feeling of a live performance without any people reacting to it. Very odd.
Yes, it was certainly a new reality for us. And we had to really adjust. You know, I mean, we had done the whole plan for Easter. We had been practicing for weeks and weeks, especially being our first one. We had so much wonderful music prepared with all of our choirs, the Vietnamese Cathedral Choir, the Spanish Cathedral Choir. I mean, we have over 300 people in our music program here, all of which were gearing up for our first Easter, and we ended up doing it with five people.
Well, not to say that there's not a beautiful tradition of small chamber singing groups, but with this coronavirus, there's a difference between standing in a choir with people right around you, sort of that intimate, beautiful feeling, but having to stand 6 feet apart from, you're 6 feet from the closest singer singing your part, that's something you also don't train for, even in a studio setting.
Right. It was just very odd all the way around.
And our conductor, you were conducting six people, but you're a mile away.
Yes, I was far away from them, and they were far away from me. So I felt like I was making these gigantic gestures, which in a normal sense, if six people would have been standing in a little circle before me, I would hardly have been moving.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt like I was conducting the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
Just to stay in their line of sight.
Just to keep them able to keep us going. But it was a marvelous Easter nonetheless, a little bit odd. Of course, all of our listeners know that you can still find our liturgies on Facebook. They're still there, and you can go there and enjoy them anytime. But I do want to thank you again, David, for your magnificent playing. It was marvelous. And the organ pieces before and afterwards, we tried our very best in very odd times.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
To do...
to still have some of our favorites. The Saraband of Howls for Easter morning can still happen even in an empty church, and so can the Vidor Toccata.
Yes, exactly. And we got them. All four masses got those. It was grand. It was surreal, though, the whole thing. And it still continues to be that way. We don't have any end date in sight when our people will begin to return. Now, after Easter, we're just down to organ and cantor.
Yeah.
Just our own staff, our staff musicians have been furloughed. And, that too is very odd to not be able to care for our musicians that give us so many hours and so much time. Well, we're going to hear a little piece now. This was one of the pieces we did on Holy Saturday. It's the Haec Dies of Jean Chapard. Haec Dies means this is the day the Lord has made. Psalm 118. It's a definite piece for our Easter season. Jean Chapard is not a very well-known composer. He died in 1558, but he was in the Mary Tudor reign, and so most of what he wrote was in Latin. Not like some of the other Tudor composers who wrote in English. And so this is a gorgeous piece, and you're going to hear that everyone was one on a part, and the two sopranos on both ends, they jump up to high G in about the fifth measure. they're each kind of in dialogue with each other. It's a magnificent piece, shouting out the great joy of Easter. So this is our little baby Corona quintet, and singing at, this is a live performance, performance on Holy Saturday of the wonderful Hektias of Jean Sapard. And when we come back, we are going to be visiting with Dr. Rudy DeVos at the Oakland Cathedral. So don't go away. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this very special episode of Music from the Tower. This is John Romero, your host, and with me in the studio is my assistant music director and cathedral organist, David Ball.
Hello, hello.
And on the phone, we have Dr. Rudy DeVos. Dr. Rudy is the music director and one of the organists at Christ Our Light Cathedral in Oakland, California. We used to be one of the newest cathedrals, but we took that right over here at Christ Cathedral. Rudy, welcome. It's so good to have you on the show.
Thank you, John.
Well, we need to have you back as a whole episode. There's so many interesting things. David and I were just in your cathedral this past January. Who knew this was going to come along, huh, with the corona thing? But we were just there and enjoyed an amazing week of music making. You hosted our Cathedral Musicians Conference, and it was spectacular. Rudy, congratulations on the wonderful music you made.
Thanks so much, John.
Well, Rudy, tell us a little bit about yourself. Our listeners will notice a little bit of an accent right away. And about your cathedral, how long you've been there, what your usual choirs are like.
So I'm originally from South Africa, grew up in Johannesburg. You know, throughout childhood, I thought I was trained as a pianist. I thought, my life will be as a pianist. It's not until I went to college that I decided to make organ my primary instrument, at which point I'd always thought I'd stay in academia. And so I went through with a DMA at the Eastman School of Music and thinking, I'll probably become, an organ professor. It's not about until halfway through my studies at Eastman when I started, doing choral conducting and working with a really good church choir, St. Anne's Church in Rochester, New York, that I started realizing, I really enjoy church music and working with the choirs. Around about the time that I was finishing up my degree, the position here at the Cathedral of Christ the Light in Oakland opened up, and I applied for the position and interviewed and was very excited after I came out here and saw the cathedral and the wonderful acoustics. And this past August, it was about 10 years to the day that I've been at the cathedral. So the cathedral opened 1 year before I came to the cathedral. So our anniversary is usually 1 year off. So the cathedral is 11 years old, and I've been there for 10 years. The road to building the music program was rather slow, not fast-paced. You know, being educated on the East Coast, I was used to things moving a little bit faster than they often do on the West Coast. But nonetheless, you know, it's been very exciting. I love, love, love making music in the cathedral. The liturgical organ is a wonderful instrument to play on. The choirs sort of have developed and morphed into various things over the years. We don't have a huge parish like you do down there in Orange, but the masses that we have here at the cathedral on Saturdays, I have a little women's schola that sings for that mass. And then we have the Cathedral Camerata that sings for the solemn mass on Sunday mornings. And then our resident men's schola, which is the ATB core group of our choral program, they also sing with the boys for the choir of men and boys. And we draw the boys from the Pacific Boy Choir Academy here in Oakland. They're a resident choir school here in Oakland, and we've partnered up with them, whereas they're choir in residence at the cathedral, and they do two concerts a year, and then we sing for several liturgies together with our men. So that's a wonderful, you know, wonderful partnership.
And then, we heard that group in January, and they were magnificent.
Yeah, fabulous.
The boys, I would say, you know, our cathedral really favors sopranos. And boy sopranos, it's just, you know, the sound is just so thrilling. I was saying to the boys after that concert that, you know, when you have 30 boys doing a huge crescendo, it is just, the same is not possible with, you know, smaller choir. It is just absolutely thrilling when they sing like that. I always tell them that they're better than rock stars.
They were little rock stars that night. And so now let's talk about this Easter. With all of those wonderful forces, girls, choirs, boys, and scholas, and now you're down to how many singers did you have for the Easter?
So, you know, when all these changes happened with the coronavirus, we went down to 8 singers. And I spaced them out so that we're not seated in the choir area, because there's not enough room in the choir area, I think, to space them out with enough space between each other. So I had them seated in the pews in the cathedral with, you know, enough physical distance between each of them and then myself. And for the most part, we could do all of the music that we programmed. Because,
oh, wow.
Yeah, because, you know, with 8 singers, with eight trained professional voices, you could still do 8-part music. The only difference was when, you know, certain pieces were cut because of liturgy not being the same. So, for example, we always do Peter Latona's Mandatum on Holy Thursday for the washing of the feet.
We do, too. Mm-hmm. Well, and not having that this year was a big loss.
Yeah, so sad.
Yeah. So, you know, we omitted that piece because the ritual was not taking place anymore. But everything else, like, you know, things that we originally programmed for, like, say, offertory and for communion, like we did Peter Latona's My Hope Is a Rhythm, that's our signature sort of offertory piece for Easter Sunday. We still did that, just minus brass, but we still did it. And the choral motets, like Randall Johnson's Alleluia, Easter communion, we still did that, and Stopford would be Caritas and Offertorium Corpus for Holy Thursday. We were still able to pull those things off with the Divisi. Also, I would say, you know, the cathedral acoustic helps. Even with just 8 trained professional singers,
yes.
The voices really carry. I mean, they're really in tune, and it even projects even, you know, even better. And we typically have them even sing for things like whenever we have confirmation masses at the cathedral too, for which I don't schedule the full choir. Something I've sort of learned during this virus and, you know, this shutdown and not having public masses, certain things were easier. Actually, getting through Holy Thursday and Good Friday was somewhat less stressful with just the professional singers instead of having the full choir.
I felt that too, you know. Yeah. There were certain benefits.
Yeah, you know, so something that I've actually considered was for next year maybe just have the full choir sing for Holy Week, like seeing Palm Sunday and seeing Easter Vigil and seeing Easter Sunday, but have the Schola, I call them the Schola Lumen Gentium, Light of the Nations, which is the name, you know, of our cathedral, have Schola seeing for Holy Thursday and for Good Friday, because it really pointed out to me that, you know, these are the forces that they were easily to pull this off. It was less stressful for everybody, and it might also be less stressful for the choir, too, and less tiring.
Well, but, and the acoustics in our empty cathedrals were really quite wonderful.
Yeah, that was a huge plus of this, is that the acoustically it was great. Organ sounded fabulous, everything.
Yeah. So I don't know about you, but like for us, it's not that big of a difference when there are people or not. We go from about, you know, if the cathedral is packed, we go from 7 seconds to 5 seconds. So it's not that big of a difference for us. But I know other places usually, you know, when you pack the cathedral's bodies.
Yes, when we pack in 2,100, it's...
It's about the same. We lose about 1 or 2 seconds off of the...
Yeah, well, it certainly was an unusual Easter, to be sure. And about how long do you anticipate having to be? Are you down to still 8 singers on a Sunday for broadcast?
Yeah, so, you know, we're continuing with 8. I mean, right now I've planned through the 4th Sunday of Easter, and then we'll see, because our shelter in place right now is scheduled until May 3rd. And so I'm waiting to see what will happen after then. But, you know, I anticipate that we will not have any full choir for the foreseeable future. It's probably going to have to be 8 for a long time.
Yes, we're kind of thinking our full choirs won't be back until the fall.
Fall. Yeah.
But
if we're lucky.
If we're lucky.
Yeah. I also hope that by fall, you know, we'll be able to have full choir. But, you know, we just have to take it a day at a time.
Right.
We didn't have brass at Easter. It was just the choir. But, you know, our bishop and our rector felt it was really important still having a schola, still having, you know, choral music at the liturgy. Our cathedral's statement of purpose is, you know, to gather people around Christ, the reason for our hope. And part of that is always, you know, the liturgy should be an elevated experience, and music is such a vital part and plays such a vital part in the liturgy. People have commented, you know, on the streaming how wonderful it still has been having the choir and uplifting it's been having the choir sing. Because, you know, I think people really need the beauty in their lives right now.
Now more than ever.
Not being able to. Yeah.
Were you always broadcasting your Mass on a Sunday, or was that something you had to pull together quickly?
We had to pull this together very quickly. We, you know, we never streamed or, you know, broadcasted the services, the Masses before, nor do we have the sound equipment for it. So it was a matter of, okay, well, we're just going to be streaming the Mass with an iPhone. And because, you know, there's no funds for, we don't have the money right now for, you know, equipment. We're not broadcasting. We don't, you know, we're not with EWT and anything like that. So we've had to just make do with doing it with a cell phone and streaming it on Facebook.
Well, like, I think that's where a lot of people went, you know, or from their little chapels, from their sacristies,
Their living rooms.
You can tell they're doing it with an iPad halfway through the Mass. It falls over, you know. So I think our cathedrals fared a little better than some of these parishes trying to do this. Yeah. Well, we want to get into some music from you, and you're going to do a little bit of Randall Thompson's Hallelujah, yes?
Yes.
That's wonderful. And thank you, Rudy, for these insights. You were amazing. And please promise me you'll come back and do a whole show sometime. I'd love to have you on as a full guest, maybe sometime when you're here visiting Orange County.
Sounds wonderful, John, and I'm looking forward to visiting your cathedral.
Yeah, so I can't wait to have you here. It'll be great. You're a marvelous musician and one of our finest in our Catholic cathedrals. So congratulations on all that you've done. And here comes the Randall Thompson Hallelujah. Welcome back. This is Music from the Tower, and I am here in the studio with David Ball, my trusty assistant.
Hello, hello.
An amazing cathedral organist. But on the phone, we have one of the dearest friends of my entire life, Dr. Richard Gabala. Rick is the music director and the organist at the Arlington Cathedral, St. Thomas More Cathedral in Arlington, Virginia. And Rick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. It's an honor to do this. Happy Easter.
Oh, same to you, my friend. We've spoken many times over these couple of days and just how odd this all was. But before we get into all of that, and we could go on for hours about all of that, let's talk about all of you. Let's talk about how long you've been at the cathedral. You and I have literally been friends for 46 years, and I treasure your friendship. And you have been at the cathedral quite a long time. Tell us about that.
Well, on July 1st, I will celebrate my 30th anniversary at St. Thomas More as director of music.
Wow. Wow.
My goodness. Congrats.
I've been at a place as long times, 19 years, 18 years, seemed like an eternity, but 30 years. Wow. I can remember your first weekend there. I was there with my children's choir.
You were.
And you can figure out how to turn on the lights in the choir room.
It's really true.
It was fabulous. Well, congratulations on that huge milestone. What an accomplishment. And your music program has really flourished in the time that you've been there. Tell us about your choirs and your program.
Well, I'm so proud of our music program. We have a wonderful youth choir from our parish school. About 40 or 50 choristers sing every other week. They do an amazing job. They're directed by Andrea Scully, who's an amazing music teacher in our parish school. And we have our cathedral choir, who about 35 to 40 singers, mostly volunteer, who are very dedicated to coming to sing fine choral music. We have a handbell choir. Cathedral Ringers, they're wonderful, too. We have two Spanish choirs. I direct one of them, and Marco does the second Spanish choir. We alternate, so I do Spanish Mass every other week. And we have a brass ensemble that plays for special occasions like Easter, priesthood ordinations, and festival occasions. And then we have a string ensemble that plays for special occasions as well, like Chrism Mass and deacon ordinations.
And you also have a diocesan choir, right?
We have a wonderful diocesan choir, yes. I started it actually 20 years ago, and they're amazing. They sing about six, seven times a year for special diocesan liturgies.
Well, you just have such an exemplary program there. It's really one of the models for the whole nation. And also, it's a real parish. So many of our cathedrals are in downtown areas where there are no people. You know, I've actually served in some of those where, gosh, if you got 150 people, you were thrilled, you know, and you've got a cathedral that's packed all the time. It's a real parish, a thriving parish.
It's a wonderful parish. Having the parish school helps a lot. Yeah, we have six weekend liturgies, five in English and one in Spanish.
And do you have the organ at all those?
We do, except Marco's Spanish choir does not use the organ. They use keyboard, guitars, and other instruments. But when I do the Spanish Mass every other week, I use the organ primarily with other instruments like clarinet, flute, cello.
Right answer, Buster. Good job.
Nice.
Thank
well,
you.
After hearing all of these forces, how weird was it to have Holy Week in Triduum?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this, John. I watch the Food Network a lot. You know, I love to cook. And I don't know if you ever watched Robert Irvine's Dinner Impossible, when you have no stove, refrigerator, or sink, and you're supposed to cook dinner for 500 people. Well, this was Triduum Impossible.
It was, indeed.
It was. No congregation, no choirs, no brass, no organists, no instruments, no handbells. Do Triduum. It was quite a challenge.
Well, you did it very, very well. I looked at some of your work, but you did not. Rudy said he had eight singers. We had five or six most of the time. Even Easter, though, was just cantor for us. And you had just cantor for all of these, right? Just one singer?
Well, when this all started, John, I was thinking of having four or eight singers, ideally, so that we could do some of the wonderful Triduum repertoire. But then I was told, no, we could only have 10 total in the cathedral. And so I was hoping to have, I went from the whole choir to four singers to two cantors and myself at the organ. And then I was told the Friday before Palm Sunday that we could only have one cantor.
Oh, wow. What a challenge.
But you know, when you have lemons, you make lemonade. And I have to say, I was so proud of what the cantors did, but that's a lot for one person to do. And not only did they have to sing, but they had to read his readings.
Oh, because you couldn't have an extra lector in the room? Is that
we couldn't have a lector.
Wow.
Our parochial vicar would do one of the Spanish readings, but basically the cantors were also the lector.
Wow. You were very strict. We weren't quite that strict, but we have a little more space to spread out, I guess, but we kind of considered the loft as one room and the church as the other. We'll probably be arrested, but we talked so much with Rudy about just the repertoire that we couldn't do, some of it because the liturgy was altered. We didn't have feet washing. We didn't have the blessing of the candle. We didn't have the blessing of the water. You did have some of that, but it was still very odd not to do the pieces we know and love so well.
We miss so much singing Peter's Mandatum during the washing of the feet on Holy Thursday. We always sing that Virgin's Child on Good Friday at some point. We love that piece of music so much. And of course, beautiful Secret Service of Palestrina that we would always sing at the Easter Vigil following the Ezekiel reading. And Peter and I love, and I think, John, you do too, Noyan's Christus Vincit with the brass and the organ. And
so
it's
beautiful.
Still so much like Easter. And we could do none of that repertoire this year.
Right. It was just, it was so odd because for me, I think of Christmas, for example, where Christmas becomes Christmas when you hear Joy to the World and you hear O Come,
right.
O Faithful. But for our people and for our choirs, you know, hearing those pieces means Easter, hearing the Alleluia chorus, hearing all these pieces that just are just absolutely part of our taste and smell and love of Easter weren't there.
Right. Yeah, it was very surreal this year.
Yeah, and no people at all, right? No congregation for you.
There were just 10 of us at every liturgy in the cathedral total. And I was all alone on the choir loft, and I have to say, it was a weird feeling being all alone. My support system was gone, and I'm blessed with wonderful organists. So usually I conduct, but this year, because of the numbers, I had to also play. And there was just no time. We were kind of building the plane mid-flight, so there was absolutely no time. David, I was jealous hearing that you were practicing every night until midnight, but I had no practice time. I really did.
Oh,
only
my.
Thursday night, I sat down at the organ thinking, okay, what stops do I pull for the opening hymn? Oh. And I was never more nervous in my life.
Yeah, Mission Impossible's right.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, we were. I mean, I don't think I've ever planned Easter so many times in one season.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
We had it all planned. We practiced all this music. Then we replanned it again for a smaller group. We replanned it again for a smaller group.
Everything just kept changing.
Yes. We had this, but then we didn't have that. We had the pressure of a national broadcast. It was horrifying. In so many ways. Was there some part of it that you did love? That was some little something that made it special in any way?
Well, I have to say, getting comments after all of the liturgies, especially from the poor choir members who could not be there, apparently over the live stream, it came across as very prayerful. And they were able to connect with some of the music that we sang and remember being there singing it themselves. So I realized that even though I had family and friends that were livid that I was leaving the house to go to do this, it's our ministry and it's what we're called to do. And I feel like it was an important thing that we all did during Holy Week.
Yeah, I don't think my children have ever spoken so sternly to me about going out.
Right.
You know, we're both of a certain age that we probably should have been staying in. Although I wasn't near very many people, I must admit.
Well, you're the safest person in the whole building.
Yeah, but I still was out, you know, and it was very scary in that sense.
Yes.
And before this, had you broadcast any liturgies?
No, John, and I have to say, I really admire you and Peter and what you do at Christ Cathedral and at the Basilica of the National Shrine. No, we had no clue. We have never live-streamed anything from our cathedral. But our wonderful Bishop Burbage is very big on communications, and he quickly realized that we had to do something. And so he had Wi-Fi brought into the cathedral, which we now have. And I have to say, for us, we had 13,000 people watch Easter Sunday Mass. I know for you and for the National Shrine, that's small potatoes. But for us, for our first time doing that, it's pretty overwhelming.
Well, it is amazing how many, I mean, 13,000 people would not fit into your cathedral. Nor ours, you know. I mean, the outreach that we had, the chance that we had to really minister and show beautiful music and show a well-constructed liturgy, it was epic.
Yeah, in a way, it pushed the church into the 21st century. Like, here we are now. We're online all over the place.
Oh, I mean, we do it every week, and we really stepped up our game, you know, and it was our first time, other than the dedication of the cathedral, to be a national broadcast, and it was very scary. You know, I mean, here we've been preparing all these choirs, all of these instruments, and now we're down to four singers, and we're going to be in live national television. It was incredibly scary and stressful.
But, John, I have to say, I watched your liturgies and I watched Peter's, and you all did an amazing job.
Well, you know, some of that we talked a little bit with Rudy and David and I before that, you know, the organ took on the role that sometimes the brass and the timpani and all of our instrumental groups, you know, had, you know, sort of been the lead players on Easter with all the brass.
Well, the thing that would be different about these liturgies.
Yeah, but David really, even though our wonderful Hazel Wright organ is not playing yet, David really brought ours just to
David's
life.
Amazing.
It was,
David, it was
absolutely amazing. Well, we've been playing a piece by each person, but you just had Cantor, so we thought we would be, you're going to get the advantage here, Rick Cabala. We're going to play a piece that your whole choir sang, not for Easter time, but it's actually a piece of Jim Beery's called The Lord Will Reign Forever, and it's a piece you commissioned, and it's published in my choral series, I'm proud to say. But tell us a little bit about this piece.
Well, our cathedral choir was celebrating their 40th anniversary 10 years ago. We just celebrated in 2019 our 50th anniversary. But for the 40th anniversary, we commissioned Jim Beery, our wonderful colleague and friend, to set this piece to music. And it's become a very special piece for us, and I hope you enjoy it.
Well, it's a perfect example of how the text of the communion, the actual communion antiphon, can be sung by a Gregorian chant, but also can be sung by a beautiful motet. Palestrina knew that trick, and Rick Cabala reminds us of that possibility. Well, this is a fabulous piece. This is you conducting your wonderful, or are you playing the organ? Are you conducting?
No, I'm conducting.
And who was playing? Do you remember?
I believe Mary Beth Bennett.
Oh, wonderful. Well, it's a gorgeous rendition of this beautiful piece. And here comes the James Beery, The Lord Shall Reign Forever and Ever. Thank you so much, Rick Cabala, for being on the show. And
Thank you, John.
Promise to come back and do a whole show soon.
I promise. Happy Easter.
Same to you. Thanks for calling. And we will be right back with so much more. And Dr. Peter Latona from the National Shrine. Don't go away. Welcome back to Music from the Tower. You've just been listening to Christ Our Passover, composed by Peter Latona. Dr. Latona is our next guest. Welcome, Peter. That was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you so much, John.
Oh, it's so good to have you on the show with us. We all watch everything you do.
Oh,
there.
Yes, we do.
Oh, my gosh. We are so proud of the work. You are the gold standard for all of us in cathedral work and in any great parish in our country. When we want to really find out how to do it right, we look to the National Shrine. It's magnificent what you do there. So thank you for all the great work.
Well, thank you. It's very kind of you to say so.
Tell us a little bit about how long you've been at the Shrine.
I actually started at the Shrine in 1997, July of 97. So that's 23 years.
Wow. And so but you began as the cathedral organist, right?
I started as assistant organist, and then 2 years later, assistant director of music. And then at the beginning of my fifth year, I was made director of music.
Wow, what a great thing for the Shrine. Well, it's incredible what you do there. And it's that most times with orchestras and brass and all sorts of things and a beautiful professional choir. I mean, it's just top notch.
Absolutely stunning, inspiring.
To all of us.
Thank you.
And the repertoire too, so what on earth was it like to, how many times did you have to replay an Easter over and over?
About three.
Yes, us too. It was crazy.
Having been there so many years, you see, you get to the point where, you know, over the years you sort of tweak and adjust this and you sort of end up with just the right repertoire and knowing exactly how everything should go. And then little things like coronavirus happen.
Yes.
And all of that goes out the window.
And it was such a changing, evolving thing. I really think we planned ours four times.
Oh, at least.
We had the whole shtick for our very first one in our new cathedral. Then we were down to, well, maybe it's going to be a small group. Then we're down to it's a quartet and plus. And then, you know, are we doing languages or not? You know,
and now there's no instruments. And now there's no.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, and this Christ Our Passover, that's a piece that you had written for this year or for other years?
For other years, we sing that as the communion antiphon. So whenever the choir is at Mass, we'll sing the communion antiphon and the introit. And I'll usually compose those. And they're just short, evocative pieces, but I think it's important for that text, the proper text of the day, to be heard.
So
we'll
agree.
Sing that, set the mood, and then typically we would do for the communion procession a wonderful arrangement that Ben LaPerry did of Ye Sons and Daughters. But, of course, this year there's no communion procession, so we didn't get to hear that, unfortunately.
And if I know Ben, it was filled with brass and all sorts of
things. It's a stunning arrangement.
It was, brass and instruments. So, we started, we thought we'd have maybe, just brass this year for the Easter Vigil, and then, and a half the choir, and then that got changed to just five singers and no instruments at all, other than the organs, of course, because we maintained at sort of 10 people maximum in the in the chancel to sort of abide by the regulations.
Well, the organ really had to take on the role of all the brass, and luckily you've got Ben and fantastic organist there. Luckily we have David, and they all did such a marvelous job of filling in where the brass and the timpani and all the rest weren't there. But
what we discovered though. And, I had planned some music, and some of it was the stuff we had done with orchestra. For the Easter Vigil, we have a chamber orchestra. And so we would include music by Handel, the Hallelujah Chorus, and Michael Haydn wrote these wonderful pieces with orchestra. And we rehearsed one of them, and I was like, without the strings there and the trumpets adding a little something and the timpani, it just didn't have the same musical effect. And so because of that, I said, this is not going to work. So what can I do instead? So I actually found this lovely text and decided to make a piece out of that. And since I only had five singers, but I wanted the feel to be, you know, joyous Easter and have the organs play out, how do you do that and not cover up five voices? So I just set it as three verses, in a sense, with organ versets in between. So the organ can play out, and then when the quintet sang, it was unaccompanied. And so the first verse was chant-like style. The second one was that tune in more of a hymn-like style. And then the third one was in compound meter, so 3-4, a nice dance feel. And I wrote it in kind of an early music style. So not unlike you would find with some of these versets composed by the French Baroque composers that were intended to be played in alternatum with vocal music, singing the other parts of the ordinary, for example.
As always, brilliant ideas, Dr. Latova. As always, we talked a little bit earlier about David and, you know, how difficult it was to still make the organ sound full and rich on a broadcast and then somehow get it down low enough to accompany singers, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That was the big challenge this year.
We, too, did a lot of a cappella singing, even on Easter. It was really just magnificent, but standing in that giant basilica, which holds 3,000 or 4,000 people, with all those flowers and all that stuff. And was this Archbishop Gregory's first Easter there as well?
It was.
Wow. Wow. Well, like no other Easter we ever imagined.
Absolutely. It was the oddest thing. Usually, Holy Saturday morning, you know, the day before Easter, the shrine is just bustling with people setting up the flowers and the orchestra tuning and the organist, you know, practicing away and all these preparations. And this year it was quiet. I mean, yes, we did set up some flowers, but there were no big liturgical rehearsals happening. There was no big rehearsal with the orchestra and the choir. And so it was very strange, but,
you mention all this in a wonderful article, which I'll put a link to on our website when I post this show. But it was a great article. And in the article, you said you had no idea you were going to give up this much for Lent. I love that. I love that line.
It's true.
We really all gave up a lot. All three guests before you said that they missed one of the pieces they missed the most was the Peter Latona Mandatum. I saw that you snuck it in for a prelude.
Yeah, sneaky there.
We did. We snuck it in for a prelude.
Well, yeah, it's a piece we all love so much.
Thank you.
And Rudy
and the choir members kind of insisted on it, you know.
Good for them. Mm-hmm. Good for them. Well, Rudy mentioned also your My Hope Is Arisen, which he did on Easter Day. So there's all sorts of connections. Although he missed the brass, he said he just couldn't believe there was no brass.
Yeah.
And I think we all missed all sorts of things, but you did such a spectacular job. It was so beautiful.
Thank you. Everything you do.
And you and I both had the pressure, the added pressure beyond a normal Sunday broadcast, a telecast that we do, of the EWTN. This was our first, minus the dedication of the cathedral, was our first time to be on EWTN. What a time, you know.
Yeah.
Here we are on EWTN with four singers. Great. But we did the best we could. And what we had you was the incredible model to follow.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we're going to end with your piece that you described just briefly, In the Father's Glory, which you actually wrote especially for this Easter Vigil. It's in five parts, is it?
Four parts with some divisi at the end, yes.
And you had five singers? Is that the most you had all through Holy Week?
Yep, five singers max. So, yeah.
Well, they sounded
like... I had to choose which singers, and depending on the repertoire and all that, it was a little bit of a challenge.
Well, that was the other thing. I had decided I was going to try to give all staff singers a little bit of work. So I had divided it up to different singers on different parts. Well, then the business manager wanted them all furloughed. So I kept four and the rest furloughed so they could go on unemployment. So then we were back to a different graph. It just went on and on.
Yep.
There was no end to
back
it.
To the drawing board.
Yeah, many, many times. Well, Peter, thank you so much for your leadership in this country, for the amazing music you write and that you give us orally. It's just incredible what you do there. We're also grateful.
Thank you. Really appreciate that.
Musicians
Thank
are
you.
Grateful, and I know your congregation is grateful, and your congregation is really the entire country. So thank you for being with us today and to telling us a little bit about what it was like in the crazy. I will put your article up there so people can read a little bit more about what happened. Thanks to
Great.
Ben and all the wonderful staff you have there. And we're going to end with this brand new piece that you wrote in The Father's Glory. And as we end today's show, we thank all three of our guests, Dr. Rudy DeVos, Dr. Richard Gabala, and Dr. Peter Latona, and our own David Paul, who was here with me in the studio. So thanks to everyone. As always, we try to end the show with reminding you to get out and support music in live performance. Well, you might not be able to do that for a while, but whenever you can, get back to those concert halls, get back to those churches, and support music in live performance. And this is Music from the Tower. We thank you for being with us. Thank you, Peter, and thank you all for listening. This is John Romero signing off for today's episode of Music from the Tower from here at Christ Cathedral. Thanks for listening.